Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. We are eager to offer amazingly competitive prices, plus an additional $1,000 Costco discount on all new Cherry Hill Volvos. When leasing or purchasing a new or certified Cherry Hill Volvo, you become a valued part of our team. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
WPHT, WPHT, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast.
This is the next generation of talk. Now, on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Rich Zeoli.
So how bad was Joe Biden's meeting with Xi Jinping? Well, it's what he didn't say that is getting a lot of attention. We're going to talk about that with a guest coming up a little bit later in this hour. Our big 6 o'clock hour is here, fourth and final hour on the show on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Now, this is a funny week because, I mean, literally a funny week. Thursday night, I'll be at Parks Casino live for a great event. It's our comedy night. We're back in person at Parks Casino Club 360 with Joe Conklin's comedy night. Got a couple great headliners coming. Your ticket's only $20. Gets you your first drink included. You have some laughs. I'll be there. Well, I got Marion Groden there, and she's hilarious, and there'll be some other comedians there as well. So coming out to Parks Casino this Thursday night, the doors open at 7, the show's at 8, and like I said, $20. You get laughs, you get company, you get good conversation, and you get your first drink included as well. So Parks Casino is on Street Road in Bensalem. You must be 21. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. So come on out Thursday night. The show will sell out. It always does whenever I get to be the MC. So make sure you're there. Of course, Joe Conklin, the man of 1,000 laughs. His impressions are fantastic. His Mitch McConnell, I'm telling you, gets me every time. He's so funny. All right, so I hope to see you there Thursday night at Parks Casino for comedy night. Get your tickets today by going to parkscasino.com/events and pick comedy night coming up this coming Thursday night. All right? I'll see you there. A federal court has blocked Biden's student loan forgiveness, which, of course, is completely unconstitutional. And this is a win for liberty and a win for the Constitution. The U.S. 8th Circuit Court of Appeals ordered a nationwide injunction pending appeal against President Joe Biden's student loan debt forgiveness program. Now, obviously, this will go up to the United States Supreme Court, as it always does, but at least the 8th Circuit has enjoined Biden's student loan bailout for now, which is very, very good. And I hope that this will be shot down completely. Because remember the background in all of this. The background is Biden's education department. They didn't pass a law in Congress. Biden's education department decided that they had the constitutional authority to do this using a law that was passed in the wake of 9/11 to give the government great powers when it comes to dealing with forgiving debts related to things like war and acts of terrorism. Not people being lazy and not paying their student loans, which, by the way, they did not even have to pay during COVID. Because during COVID, the student loans were suspended. But the government argues, Biden argues, well, COVID is just like 9/11. It's a great attack on our country. And for that reason, then, well, we got to forgive all the student loan debt. And we're going to cite this law that was passed after 9/11 to justify it. And Biden doesn't know what the hell's going on. Obviously, he's muttering to himself all the time. He thinks that he passed this. And he said this, and I played the clip for you before when he goes, oh, it passed by a few votes. No, it didn't. It was never a vote. Congress did not pass this law. This is the executive branch of government, again, using extraordinary powers to try to do something that is absolutely an act of Congress, period. So don't think for a second that this will survive the United States Supreme Court. I believe they will shoot this down. Given the justices we have on there, thank God, Trump's justices, because no matter what you want to say, I told you this in November of 2016. You got to vote for Trump because we need the Supreme Court. He delivered. We got a great majority on that court, thank God. And I cannot justify, I cannot see a Neil Gorsuch, for example, justifying how the administration could bypass the legislative branch and take such massive action using something that was clearly the intent of the legislature at the time, 9/11, an act of war, as the means of them doing so. So I think this will be shot down again. But of course, look, you can never predict what the court's going to do, but at least for now, it's on hold. It'll be a challenge. It'll be appeal and, you know, all that will happen. But nevertheless, this is a very, very big win. I'm going to get into China, and we got a lot of stuff on Biden in China, which I will get to as the show goes on today. But Biden was actually asked about abortion today during the press conference, and he stammered and he muttered again. And I believe we have that clip, Matt DeSantis, so let's take a listen. Maybe we don't have that clip.
We do have. I'm pulling it up
now.
We do have it. Yeah.
Well, everybody's firing in all cylinders today on a Monday
it's
show.
Monday,
I'll tell you
yeah.
What.
No,
yeah,
I don't
take
have
your time. No rush.
Here we go. I have it. Here we go.
But what should Americans expect from Congress as it relates to abortion rights after the midterm?
I don't think they can expect much of anything other than we're going to maintain our positions. I'm not going to get into more questions. I shouldn't even answer your question. No, I don't think that. I don't think there's enough votes to codify unless something happens unusual in the House. I think we're going to get very close in the House, but I think it's going to be very close, but I don't think we're going to make it.
All right, thank you.
I shouldn't have even taken the question. And then, of course, thank you. Shut up, everybody. Get out of the room. Get out. Shut up. Get out. Biden was also confused a couple times today. Remember, he's given his pre-list of people to call on. Because it's never a fair press conference. He's never going to take people who are going to actually challenge him on anything. So that reporter kind of slipped in there a little bit. But this is Biden now getting confused. Cut 26.
Now, I'm happy to take questions, and I'm told there are going to be four questioners, but I'm not going to do 10 questions from each questioner. All right? Let's just make that clear at the outset here.
So I'm told there will be four questions, and that's it. Think about this now. He just met with Xi Jinping. I've got questions about fentanyl. I got questions about COVID. I got all kinds of questions. He's only taking four questions, no follow-ups or limited follow-ups, and only four questions. All right. Cut 26.
I can't have trouble reading this. Reuters, Natanja Bose.
Mushroom. This is when he does the land shark thing. Mushroom. And I played this earlier for you, but it's worth playing again. How a member of the American media tried to ask the president a question on human rights and was actually physically grabbed by a Chinese official who tried to silence the member of the American media. And obviously, Biden doesn't want to address human rights either. He doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to address fentanyl, human rights, the origins of COVID-19, none of those things. He doesn't want to really challenge Xi Jinping on Taiwan. He doesn't want to do any of these things. Cut 29.
A producer from one of the American networks was shouted a question, as is done, a question about whether President Biden would raise the issue of human rights. And then the Chinese, Xi's security, jumped in. Tell us what happened.
That's right. So, you know, the way that this works, as you well know, is that the pool producer represents the rest of the press corps, and she asked a question whether the president was going to raise human rights with President Xi, and a man who was wearing a white mask with a Chinese flag on it pulled her back and pulled her back. She stumbled. She didn't fall, but lost her balance a little bit. And then two White House officials stepped in and said that she was to be left alone. So it just underscores the sort of tensions that there were. We're going into this meeting.
See that? Here is now the president giving his opening remarks from Indonesia following the meeting with Xi Jinping. Cut 22.
few words about the recent elections held in the United States. What we saw was the strength and resilience of the American democracy, and we saw it in action. And the American people proved once again that democracy is who we are. And there was a strong rejection of election deniers at every level, from those seeking to lead our states and those seeking to serve in Congress, and also those seeking to oversee the elections. And there was a strong rejection of political violence and voter intimidation. And there was an emphatic statement that in America, the will of the people prevails. I've traveled this week, and it's been clear just how closely the world and our allies and our competitors as well have been following our elections at home. Excuse me, I have a little cold. And what these elections showed is that there's a deep and unwavering commitment in America to preserving and protecting and defending democracy. Now, let me speak briefly about our agenda over the past few days in Egypt and in Cambodia and here in Indonesia. In this moment of great global challenges, from global inflation to the climate crisis to Russia's brutal war against Ukraine, we're bringing together the broadest possible coalition of partners to deliver results. At COP27 in Egypt, I made it clear that thanks to the bold agenda of our administration, we pursue from day one to tackle the climate crisis and advance energy and security at home and around the world. The United States will meet our emissions target under the targets under the Paris Agreement. And we're going to keep working with our partners to support the most vulnerable countries in building resilience to climate impacts and to align global ambition with the 1.5 degrees Celsius goal, while supercharging our clean energy transition.
So China is building one new coal-powered plant a day, and our president's up there going, oh yeah, we're going to meet the goals of the Paris Climate Agreement. And no mention of fentanyl, no mention of COVID, but he's going to go on and talk about the Paris Climate Accord. By the way, breaking news, prosecutors say there'll be no criminal charges expected against Rudy Giuliani. Remember, he was another one who had his office raided in a sea of intimidation that this administration is doing against their political opponents. I've never seen in my lifetime political intimidation like we're seeing right now. Right now. Tomorrow, hopefully, we'll have on the show Eli Lake. He wrote a great piece for Commentary Magazine about the FBI and just how wrong it is. Oh, and I should mention, Dave Chappelle made a joke about that, too. Dave Chappelle made a joke about the FBI and the government and all their surveillance and everything else they do against their citizens in part of his monologue at Saturday Night Live. And he said, we, meaning like black people, we've been telling you white people this for a long time now, how the government will do this to us. And he makes a joke about what the FBI and J. Edgar Hoover did to Martin Luther King Jr. And I've told you about that in the past before. You know, it's funny to me how the left loves to turn around and say, anyone who questions the methods of the FBI or the Department of Justice is un-American and is inspiring violence against these hardworking members of law enforcement. And as Chappelle joked in his monologue, the FBI has a huge, huge track record of going after people like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, singers, actors, musicians, poets, writers of all kinds and stripes, simply for their political views, and spying on them and intimidating them, harassing them. I mean, it goes on and on. And we're seeing this play out today right now in this country right now. It's why I keep telling you my concern is they'll indict Donald Trump at some point, because they have to prove a point. It doesn't mean he's guilty, but indictments don't always mean they're guilty. But it's the simple act of doing so that is what they love to do and flex their muscles. It's like when they go and arrest a pro-life leader by showing up at his house with SUVs, or when they drag Roger Stone out of his house, or Paul Manafort in shackles and chains with the SUVs and, you know, heavily armed guys raiding their homes in the pre-dawn. It's entirely about intimidation. It's about telling you to sit down and shut up, because if we can get them, we can get you. And I keep saying this, but this administration has a pattern of this. This is what they do. I'll give you an example. You're a mom, and you're at the school board meeting, and they start talking about, you know, well, we're thinking about making a vaccine mandate for the kids. And you are saying, hell no. But you're, maybe you don't want to stand up and speak now because Merrick Garland suggested you might be a domestic terrorist and maybe the FBI's in the room. So you don't want to post anything on social media. You don't want to say anything. You want to keep quiet because you know that they're watching you. That's the goal of all this. Why did they raid Giuliani's office? I don't think Giuliani did anything wrong. Obviously, he didn't. They're not indicting him, although an indictment does not mean guilt. It's very important to say that. As you know, I'm a big civil libertarian when it comes to that stuff. Indictments don't mean guilt, but the left believes that today, of course. But they wanted to intimidate everybody. It's what they do. It's the game that they play, and they keep playing it all the time. And it's a real problem. We have the most political justice department since J. Edgar Hoover, and maybe even more so. And this is all because, again, much like how the Biden administration is abusing the powers given to this government after 9/11 by trying to justify canceling student loan debt, using powers that were given to cancel debt in the wake of war terrorist attacks, we gave the government all this power over us in the wake of 9/11 saying, please protect us from terrorists, please. And I told you years ago, the Zioli axiom is they will weaponize this power and use it politically against us. And that's exactly what they do. And we've seen it time and again. And if the Republicans get control of the House, and it looks like they will, thank God, I mentioned two people they need to go after. Hunter Biden and Dr. Fauci, Asanto Fauci, the nation's leading infectious disease doctor. You always have to say that by law. And I'd also like them to go after Merrick Garland, too. Let me add a third to that list. Maybe add a fourth, Christopher Wray. Bring in the attorney general, bring in the FBI director, and just have at it. Why do you need to go to a pro-life leader in Bucks County? Why do you need to go to his house with heavily armed guys in the front and the back door when he was accused of simple assault and the charges weren't even pursued in Philadelphia? What do you need to show up heavily armed with the big SUVs and the guys in the bulletproof vests for and everything like that in a pre-dawn raid on this guy's house like he's freaking, El Chapo? I'd like to have those conversations. Wouldn't you? This is why the oversight is so critical in all of this. 855-839-1210. Winter is coming. I'm not happy about it, but it is coming. And so you got to make sure that your home is ready to go. So I'm talking about doors, windows, roof repairs, siding, all of it. You got to make sure it's ready. Well, my friends Stephanie and Matt, who own Emmons Roofing and Siding, they know that times are tough right now and prices are killing us, but they're giving you an inflation relief discount of 10% off plus 12 months same as cash to pay for it. 10% off windows, doors, roof repairs, and a new roof, and 12 months same as cash so you can cover the payments, but you got to get the work done. That's the thing. You can't put it off, and times are tough, but they get it. They're, you know, Stephanie and Matt are friends of mine. Their son plays with my son. They're good people, and they serve our whole community. They serve Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. And they, like you, are dealing with these economic times. And also, we're still having supply chain issues. So don't wait. Reach out to them today at emmonsroofing.com, E-M-M-O-N-S. If I trust them in my home, and let's see, they did my roof, so I got a 50-year warranty on my roof because they use the Owens Corning shingle, the best in the business, replaced my windows, replaced my doors, did siding for me. I've used Emmons for basically everything. I joke that this is the house that Emmons built. Well, you know they can do great work for you as well. EmmonsRoofing.com, E-M-M-O-N-S, 10% off, plus 12 months same as cash financing with EmmonsRoofing.com.
The Zioli Show, on your schedule, from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
All right, we got a guest coming up on China. That'll be good as well. I got an email from somebody saying, I lost them as a listener because of my endorsement of Ron DeSantis. I have not endorsed Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis isn't even running for president. Look, I'm trying to give my analysis on the state of the race and the state of the Republican Party. And I'm just telling you how I see it. I haven't endorsed or unendorsed anyone for that matter either. I'm just telling you what I think's going on here. And they said, well, you said it's Ron DeSantis's moment to run. Yeah, it is. Everybody has their political moment. I think it's Gavin Newsom's political moment, too. God knows I'm not endorsing that lunatic. But everybody has their moment in politics. It's just, it is what it is. Doesn't mean you're going to win, but it's your moment. And usually people run in their moments. Sometimes it's two moments. It's the first time they run and then the second time they run. But you got to seize the moment sometimes. That's not the same thing as an endorsement. I'm really worried about how ugly this is going to get. If I'm already getting people telling me they're not listening to me anymore, we got to take a deep breath here. This could get very, very ugly. And we got to not kill each other here, because the candidates have to kill each other. I don't mean that, obviously, literally, but I mean, that's up to them to fight, and then we got to back whoever winds up winning, and you can't wind up, like, you're dead to me because you're DeSantis, or you're dead to me because you're sticking with Trump. I mean, we can't do that. That's, primaries are always ugly politically, always, but we got to try to maybe not make it so personal with each other, as we're not the ones running. They are. You know what I mean? It's just my two cents here. Otherwise, it will be impossible to pick up the pieces of Humpty Dumpty and put them back together again to go beat whoever the Democrat is in 2024. If it shakes out this way. Who knows? DeSantis may decide he's not going to run. But I said the same thing in 2012. I said, this is Chris Christie's moment. This is his time, that the calling is for him now. And then it passed him by. It doesn't mean that he would have won in 2012. Obama still may have beat him. And it also doesn't mean he would have won the primary in 2012. He may have lost to somebody else. But everybody has their moment in politics. And some people wind up running after their shelf life has expired, where clearly you look back and you go, you know what? That your moment was then. I'll give you another example. Donald Trump's run for president before 2016. He ran several times for president. Those were never his political moments. 2016 was, and he obviously won that. But maybe if he hadn't run the previous times, he wouldn't have had the experience that he needed in 2016. Either way, take a deep breath. This could get very, very ugly. I'm not going to let... You can't read into every little word and utterance, and we can't play that game. We'll lose our minds. We'll kill each other before the Democrats even have a chance to run a single attack ad if that happens. You know, these are big boys here. They're going to make up their decisions. They're going to make up their minds. We can't hate each other's guts for it, though, because of decisions that we literally have no control over. I have zero control over what Donald Trump does. I have zero control over what Ron DeSantis does. You have zero control over either. And you're going to pick whoever you want to pick, among others, too. Glenn Youngkin may get in the race. I think it's probably his political time as well. And whatever happens here, at some point, everybody's got to kind of, you know, hug and make nice. We got to try to, it's the same approach I had in 2015 and 2016 too, because I saw the bad blood, and I had to beg people in November 2016. I had to beg people, please come back and vote for Trump no matter what, because we have to win. We can't let Hillary Clinton win and then control the appointments of the Supreme Court. So, you know, maybe none of this will happen. Maybe Trump will decide not to run. Maybe DeSantis will decide not to run, but you know, either way, if Trump runs, he's going to have a primary. It's inevitable. They're not just going to all clear the field for him. And if Trump doesn't run, it's not going to be an anointment of DeSantis. There are going to be other Republicans running. And if Trump decides to take a pass, everybody who right now is crapping all over DeSantis because they think it's going to be Trump versus DeSantis, you're suddenly going to be on Team DeSantis very, very quickly. But he's still going to have a primary. He's still going to have to fight other Republicans for the nomination. It's just inevitable. Well, then the days of coronations are over. We don't have them anymore. So I'm just pointing that out because, you know, I've said nothing critical of Trump. I've said nothing that's an endorsement of DeSantis for president, who's not even running, by the way. He's not even announced he's running for president yet. And I'm already getting those nasty emails. I've got a few of them, too. And I sometimes think people hear what they want to hear. I don't know. But, you know, I'll tell you like I see it. I mean, I think that whatever happens here is completely and utterly beyond my control or your control. These are political titans. Trump obviously thinks to himself, I mean, this is literally his last chance. He doesn't have another chance after this. 4 years is not realistic for him. And I'm sure DeSantis is probably sitting there with his people thinking, I'm the most popular elected official in the country right now. And he is. Trump's not elected. He's the most popular elected official in the country, in the Republican Party. It just won massive in the state that you have to win for the presidency. And I'm sure he's got his advisors sitting around the table saying, you got to run. But maybe there's other voices in the room saying, or maybe he doesn't want to do it. Maybe he thinks to himself, I got to finish out my term in Florida. I don't know. Either way, getting mad at me or getting mad at your friend is not going to change Trump's thinking or DeSantis's thinking. It's just not. You know, whatever decision these guys make is going to be made by all kinds of factors that are going into this. And it's not going to be poll numbers either, because these guys are smart enough to know poll numbers change. So it's not going to be that. No, I doubt very highly that Ron DeSantis is sitting in Florida right now looking at whatever poll that just posted on Twitter showing that he's beating Trump, or whatever poll just posted on Truth Social showing that he's losing to Trump. Whatever decisions these guys are making are going to be way beyond that. You're talking about, can I raise the money? Do I want the stress? Do I want to be away from my family? What about my obligations here? Can I win? Is it winnable? Can I get staff? I mean, all of those questions are what they're tackling here. And if this, then that. So, you know, it's going to be a long, potentially very ugly road here. And just like I said in 2016, when it came down to Cruz and it came down to Trump, we got to not kill each other here. We have to. We can't. We just can't. It's too important to get the White House back in 2024. You know, and there's people who have their opinion that, you know, if Trump's the nominee, we lose. And other people, you know, if Trump's not the nominee, we lose. You can have those debates, but remember something. These guys will make those decisions independent of whatever Twitter, Facebook battle you're having right now with somebody who disagrees with you. They're not, like, Trump and DeSantis are not going on Twitter and Facebook and seeing what the popular opinion is. They're just not, you know, these are bigger decisions than that, so. And, like, there's what happens in every Republican primary is they get very, very ugly and very nasty. And some days the person who was your mortal enemy becomes your running mate, which has happened before in politics. And don't forget what happened in 1980 when Reagan turned around and picked up George H.W. Bush as his running mate. Says Kennedy picked up Lyndon Johnson. I mean, and these things happen, too. So remember that. And there's also externalities that happen. You know, candidates drop out. They can't raise the money. They find out that outside of their home state, they can't raise money. Maybe Glenn Youngkin's not as much of a household name as he thinks he is, for example. Maybe DeSantis decides it's not the right time for his kids. Who knows? But anyway, I got to take a quick break. Coming right back. Don't go away.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Thanks for listening to the Scioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
I absolutely believe there need not be a new Cold War. I've met many times with Xi Jinping, and we were candid and clear with one another across the board. And I do not think there's any imminent attempt on the part of China to invade Taiwan. And I made it clear that our policy in Taiwan has not changed at all. It's the same exact position we've had. I made it clear that we want to see cross-strait issues peacefully resolved. And so it never has to come to that. And I'm convinced that that he understood exactly what I was saying. I understood what he was saying. And look, I think the United States is better prepared than any country in the world, economically and politically, to deal with the changing circumstances around the world. And I think Xi Jinping is, we agreed that we would set up a set of circumstances where on issues that we had to further resolve details, We agreed that we would have our chief of staff, the appropriate cabinet members and others sit and meet with one another.
All right. Here to talk about China and Xi, Dakota Wood is my guest, senior research fellow, Defense Program Center for National Defense at the Heritage Foundation. Dakota Wood, thanks for joining me here on this very busy Monday. Give me your overall thoughts on how it went today with President Biden and President Xi.
Yeah, well, more importantly, I'm just thrilled to be on your show. Thanks for having me on. Just a great program.
I'm honored to hear you say that. Thank you. And thank you for your service. Right. Friday was Veterans Day. You spent several decades in the United States Marine Corps, so thank you for your service.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. Hey, on Xi and China, nothing is going to change. So there wasn't a whole lot of preparation going into this meeting. Normally, in summits between senior leaders of big countries, there is a lot of legwork. You know, what are you trying to accomplish out of this? What are the objectives and the takeaways? This was all just a lot of blather. You know, my interpretation. They didn't discuss anything about COVID. There was no change in position. She said, look, Taiwan is a red line issue for us. You know, it's a go to war sort of thing. And yet just a few weeks ago, if that long, you had Anthony Blinken talking about an accelerated timeline for China to invade Taiwan. And then his boss, you know, President Biden, says, I don't see any imminent danger of invasion of Taiwan. The current chief of naval operations in the U.S. Navy has said invasion is imminent within the next year. Former Admiral Phil Davidson, who was the Indo-PACOM commander, fully expects China to invade, you know, in the next 2 to 3 years. So, you know, interpretation is across the board on this, right? Congress is moving to ease the provision of major weapons, just as we have done for Ukraine, to speed the delivery of munitions to Taiwan. So, you know, what are we, the public, supposed to take from this, right? Taiwan is an unresolvable issue for China. We are 8,000 miles away. President Biden is saying nothing to worry about for the foreseeable future, you know, imminent threats. And yet on both sides, you're seeing a ramping up of tensions, you know, an escalation of rhetoric. China has made almost all-time highs in terms of air incursions and naval incursions around the island. So I think, you know, the proof is in the eating of the pudding, right? And that we will have to see how China's behavior changes in the weeks ahead. You know, is there a lessening or is there an increase? No change in how they're treating the Uyghurs, no change in their surveillance state, you know, with social credit scores, no change in predatory monetary practices or the theft of intellectual property from the West. So I'm not really sure what positive came out of this meeting other than a photo op for Biden and for him to say, I was very clear and determined in meeting with Xi Jinping, my good friend, whom I've, you know, known for many years.
Dakota Wood, how does Biden not bring up COVID? I mean, I know how he doesn't, but that seems to me to be one of those things where, you know, my buddy Jimmy Failla had a great tweet about this. He said it's like riding in a car with OJ for 3 hours and not bringing up Nicole. I mean, how do you not bring this up?
Yeah, he said he would talk about his good friend Cato Kaelin, right, and never mention the woman, you know, between the two of them. So, I mean, it's just ridiculous. You know, Biden says in the readout from the White House, very clear about our concerns about the Uyghurs. Okay, so what's the takeaway? You know, are we going to punish Apple, you know, company for making all their iPhones in China? You know, what are we doing with essentially slave labor, supposedly, you know, being extracted from, you know, the Uyghur population and their camps and all that? So, you know, he makes these kind of grandiose statements about our general concern about human rights issues as they with regard to China and China's predatory practices, but doesn't mention Wuhan lab or the millions of Chinese, some of whom are welded into their apartments. You know, these lockdowns that occur with COVID, no provision of food and water or medical support. They just seal off entire apartment buildings. And the stories that have come out of China are heart-wrenching about people banging on doors and pleading for, you know, some kind of food and water. No mention of that, you know, as well. So I think, you know, again, it was just a bunch of bluster and a photo op And if you've seen the video of Biden striding through, you know, the hotel lobby wearing a Mao suit, you know, I mean, what minded American president would do that? Oh, my gosh, you know?
And Dakota Wood, some reporter tried to ask Biden about human rights, and this Chinese official physically pulled them away. And I mean, that's insane that that's allowed to happen.
Yeah, because they're in Indonesia. I mean, it's not even China, right? So they're, you know, they're meeting on the island of Bali as a side affair to the G20 meeting. 19 of the major industrialized countries in the European Union make up the 20. Russia is not going to be there. So it's in Indonesia, and yet you have Chinese security officers dictating what Western media can do in asking a question of the American president. And our team, you know, allows that to happen as well. So, you know, if the White House is wanting to say we were coming from a position of strength based on the outcome of the midterm elections that are not quite concluded, okay, you know, a photo op with Xi Jinping, I guess. This is the second time Xi has left China since the end of the whole, you know, two-year COVID pandemic. But his first visit was with Vladimir Putin in Russia. So what does that tell you? You know, it's going to be a lot of spin out of the White House, but you're not going to see any change in behavior in the coming weeks or months.
Dakota Wood served our country for 2 decades in the United States Marine Corps. He is the Senior Research Fellow for Defense Programs at the Heritage Foundation, and it's wonderful to have him join me here on this very important day with Biden meeting with Xi. Taiwan, I think a lot of people hear the president say the one China policy. I don't think he understands it. I don't think a lot of people do. But explain what that means for us. Does that mean that the United States of America recognizes Taiwan's independence?
Up until the 70s, we recognized the government in Taiwan as China, and that mainland China or the People's Republic of China was a different sort of thing. And then to make good with the opening of China, you know, under Kissinger and those efforts moving forward, we changed it to a one China policy. The United States recognized there's just one China, but there are these two kind of different systems, and the United States doesn't want to see that relationship or system changed by force from either side. So Taiwan, we wouldn't tolerate invading China like they'd ever think of doing that. But we also would intervene if we saw mainland China trying to bring Taiwan back under Beijing's rule by force. So the United States position is we want to see this solved peacefully. The intentional ambiguity is we never made any promises to Taiwan that if they were attacked, we would respond militarily. There are these kind of assurances, you know, they're a little bit vague. We certainly, in our one China policy, leave the option to support Taiwan with the provision of self-defense articles, right? So if Taiwan wants to buy an airplane or a ship or something like that, we will sell that to them so they can defend themselves, but that's not rising to the level of a treaty obligation or an alliance where we are compelled, right, or obligated to intervene. So this one China says, we love both of you guys. We recognize the one main government we deal with is in Beijing, but we've got kind of a side relationship with those folks over in Taipei.
Last question I want to ask you about this. What does it take to serve as deterrence? Obviously, nobody wants World War III with China, but mm-hmm. we also don't want to see China go in and invade Taiwan. We also don't want to see China continue to steal our intellectual property. We also don't want right. to see another global pandemic coming out of the lab in Wuhan. What does it take to deal with China?
It has to be economic measures in some way. I mean, when President Trump imposed all those tariffs on a lot of goods coming from China, he was roundly criticized because if we're importing a basketball for a dollar and then we impose a 50% tariff on that basketball because it's coming from Taiwan or from China, then it costs $1.50. So you're basically imposing a tax on the purchaser, on the consumer here in the United States. And free market capitalists don't like government intervention at all. And yet all the money that flows from the United States to China – to the PRC enables them to have their One Belt, One Road initiative, to expand their military force, to do lots of testing, to triple the size of their nuclear-tipped intercontinental ballistic missile inventory, which is what they're doing. And so they recognize that capitalism with Chinese characteristics enables them to have the wealth to do all the things that they're currently doing, right? So the only thing that you can do to kind of constrain them is to harm them somehow economically. So you need to make, you know, move manufacturing out of China, buy, purchase fewer Chinese goods, even if it means, you know, spending a nickel or dime or a dollar more, you know, to get the item that you want. So these economic dependencies, where the U.S. is dependent on Chinese markets, enables China to do what it is currently doing. And I you know, diplomatic statements aren't going to do anything. Our military is much too small to handle it. We have fewer than 300 ships in our Navy, only about 60 of those in the Indo-Pacific. China has 360 ships, plus the Coast Guard and maritime militia, and its maritime fishing fleet that it can arm as well. So numerically and geographically, they have a military advantage. So really the only thing the U.S. can do is to garner support from other trading partners to impose economic penalties on China.
You coming to the Army-Navy game?
I would love to. I'll watch it on television, but I've got stuff going on here at home that's going to keep me from attending.
Well, I know you're an Annapolis guy, so I figured yeah. You know, we could bring you to Philly and have a beer. But listen, I thank you for your time tonight. You are now our go-to guy on foreign policy. Congratulations.
Hey, anytime I can help out. Thanks so much. Philly is an awesome city. Visited once or twice. I'm looking forward to going back. So thanks for including me.
Well, listen, Dakota Wood, thanks for all your service to our country and your great analysis tonight. We appreciate it, my friend.
Take care.
We will talk again soon.
Hey.
Sounder, oh, man, would you wake up over there?
You have never played any Sounders when you went to the afternoon, and now all of a sudden you want all these Sounders.
DeSantis, he's killing me.
He's been terrible today.
See, I had this, I had the Sounder ready for the last guest. And I was like, oh, he's not going to use it.
I love how Matt doesn't beat around the bush. He's like, no, he's been terrible. He sucks.
No, I have been sucking today. I've been off my game. I'll admit that. I'm a man, and I'll own up.
It wasn't Daniel's best performance by any stretch of the imagination.
If anyone's sports betting, today is not their day.
No, if you bet on Daniel, you came up short for certain. You even made Henry look competent today.
Oh, short is an understatement. Let's just say that.
Yeah, you're making us miss Henry, which is impossible to do.
I'm looking forward to Henry being here tomorrow.
All right, you don't give me the rest of the week. Let's not. All right. You know what? You guys aren't going to make me cry. I'm going to go home.
You know what? I know your mom and dad are listening, and they're going to. And I know I can hear your mom now going, be nice to my Daniel.
Actually, no. She texted me. She's like, what is going on? She was laughing. She's like, haha, Rich is ganging up on you. I said, oh, thanks.
Fantastic. All right, we got to do this thing we got to do. Let's do it.
Who won social media?
All right. There's a lot of great content on social media today. I'm going to give it to a few people. So the first one's going to go to the 3-7 Chris Eppolito, who said, that's it, Rich. I'm done with giving Matt DeSantis the TV critic credentials on the show. You asked him what he thought of Yellowstone, and he panned it like a Hannah Montana rerun. I'm through. Then Chris, the greater Chris, responded with an equally hilarious tweet. He posted a poll asking whose favorability ratings are plummeting faster, Matt DeSantis or Donald Trump. I'm winning handily right now, 71% to 29, so get your votes in. I'd like to win.
Daniel, is this not pathetic, the hijacking of this segment? It's literally all about him.
Yeah, it is. And I also had a liner for it. I don't know, you know.
Oh, can we hear it?
Yeah. Matt said he was going to do something to it, so I don't know if he...
Matt, forget him. I'm going to override him. This is the beautiful part about my job.
Here we go. Who kissed Matt DeSantis' ass the most?
No, you can't say
that. You can. You can say that on the air.
No, it's not. There are kids in the car. Come on.
At 6 o'clock? I doubt it.
Well, it's 7 o'clock, first of all, and it's possible. Night school. The kids are picking up the kids from night school.
Night school. That's not a thing anymore.
I love that Daniel. I tell Daniel, you know what? I'll bleep that just to be on the safe side. And then he just goes rogue and plays it anyway.
Yeah. You know what he hasn't done? Bleeped it.
I'm a busy man.
This is insane. The show's off the rails today. My apologies. Somebody said it's like a morning show that started at 3. I'm sorry. Mea culpa. All right. Good job, actually, Daniel. Your music was excellent. Everything else was
subpar. Yeah.
Congratulations on a job done. All right. The great one, Mark Levin, is up next. Let's do this.
Now, Rich Zeoli's final thoughts.
All right, I'm way over time, so have a great rest of your night tonight. And remember, let's not kill each other, no matter how ugly this primary gets. We'll see what Trump announces tomorrow night. Thank you so much for listening on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. Thank you.
Rich Zeoli, weekday afternoons, 3 to 7, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.